You know how to do this. You've done it, you know, more than 200 times. 200 times? How many shows are we in now?
We're at 217.
You've done 217 shows.
Oh, here's the weird thing.
Well, you've done more than 250 if we're talking about the others.
Let me tell you something weird.
Okay. On the air or just now?
You want to tell it on the air?
Sure. Tell me something weird on the air. Why not?
It's about our numbers. I don't want to talk about our numbers on the air. I think that's kind
of... Okay, what's our numbers?
When
we talked porn, through the roof.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
I'm Ian Boothby.
We've
got it. We were getting it right, and I was hoping we'd just keep going.
Oh, okay. You looked at me kind of a
no, way, I was like... going like, no, we got it right. We haven't screwed it up, we did, and fuck. For the 217th time. Please continue.
Always a disaster.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here. I have nothing to contribute to the show this week, so I'm hoping that you are
happy to be here.
You're happy to be
anywhere.
I'm happy. Yeah, I am happy to be anywhere. You know, as you know, we've talked about it. It's now officially past a month away from my 50th birthday.
Okay.
Which is the 22nd of February.
Right. May I interrupt your talk of your birthday to wish someone a happy birthday?
No.
Anyway, happy birthday to Louise Moon, who I believe, while we're recording this, it is her birthday on this day. So when she hears this, it will be a couple of days after her birthday.
Oh.
So please retroactively wish yourself a happy birthday and get your family members to give you the bumps.
Please.
Yeah.
Or we'll have to come over there and do it.
Yeah. And one to grow on.
And happy birthday, Louise.
It's okay. So now now that we're on that topic of birthdays, back to your birthday.
Well, just that, you know, it's coming up. It's, you know, I feel like, I don't know. I don't know what I feel like.
Well, it's we're not living in a Logan's Run type world, so you're not going to be hoorded with other 50-year-olds.
How do you know? We don't know.
No.
We haven't turned 50 yet. Where do they go after they turn 50?
I think
where do all the people go after they turn 50? Where do they go?
The movies. And then they vote for the whitest actors they can find.
Yes, is that what happens?
Yeah, I believe that's what happens. Hmm. Old, out of touch. Now, I think what you can do once you turn 50 is you can just sit on... You got a porch, right? You can just sit on your porch and just yell at cars. I think you can do that. Everyone will go like, why is he doing that? And he's like, he's 50 now. And everyone goes, oh, I get you.
I wish I had a front porch. I don't have a front porch.
Build one. But we could do a segment called Porch Talk.
My house
deck talk was one of our most popular segments. Then you built the fucking deck.
It was.
And now where are we?
Well,
we got
still,
nothing. We had the deck and we had Beatles. Those are the only two things we had that anyone wanted to listen to. And then so now maybe we could porch it up.
Well, deck talk is still an ongoing thing because my deck has a tarp on it. So, you know, I still have a whole rich story to tell about when the tarp comes off.
What do you call those things that you put like a gondola? Not a gondola. What do you call it? Like a gazebo.
Gazebo.
Make a gazebo for the front lawn. You got enough room for a gazebo?
I don't know if you're allowed to do. Are you allowed to put big structures like that out on your front lawn?
Why would anyone be not pro gazebo? Now, listen, by the way, I was walking through my neighborhood today and I noticed that my neighbor had built a little like little bridges and dug a little river in his front yard
that's fine.
Done all this kind of business. And I'm like, I can't believe you could do all that and not have a gazebo. Like, what's
That you're limited, like how big the structures can be at the front of your house. You know, like you couldn't build like a sauna.
Okay. So what would be the negative of like, you know, ugh, a gazebo, this is bringing property values down.
Yeah.
It seems like that would bring property values up. This is gazebo territory. These guys must be pretty well off, right? That's not a poor person's thing, a gazebo.
But it's kind of a,
you know,
I don't know. It's okay, I guess. But, you know, they kind of start to get, they kind of look kind of ratty after a while, right?
You maintain your gazebo.
Do people maintain their gazebos? Seriously.
Well, after 50, you should really get them checked once a year.
You should
just
really,
to make sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do people really? Yeah. Do they?
I like a gazebo.
Like you hear, but if you know someone who has like a backyard with a lot of fancy stuff in it, it looks great for a few years. And then when you go there a little while later, you're like, it's kind of.
Well, you got to have upkeep.
Yeah. That's a problem.
That's with anything.
I know it is.
It's like with us too.
Yes.
If you just ignore us for a couple of years, we're going to look like shit.
But
we're going to really gazebo it up.
But look at us.
All right. I would. They can't because we're on a podcast.
Think of us as gazebos.
Okay. Well, how about we're gazebros?
High five for that.
Woo!
Yeah. Gazebros. Just think of
us
as...
Seems like gazebros would really vote for a really white Oscars.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Right. And gazebras would vote for a black and white Oscars.
Ah, there you go. Well played. Now you should really
high
end the show
again.
Now. Nope. Can't do it. Can't do it. One per show. One
Damn.
Per show. That's the limit.
That was so good. Plus, I did a really loud woo and hurt some people's ears in the
audience. I'm not gonna callous my hand up for that kind of business.
I'm sorry about that.
All right, so you got your birthday coming up.
Yeah.
So are you doing stuff that you could only do in your 40s right now, just burning through it all?
Yes, that's right. Only things that you only could do in your 40s. What are things you can only do in your 40s? I haven't even thought of that.
Reminisce about your 30s.
I can do that.
Because if
50s.
You're in your 50s, you're not going to be thinking, "Ugh, my 30s. That was a good time." You'd be thinking, "Oh, my 40s. That was pretty great."
No, I think you'd be thinking that. You could be thinking like, "Wow, where did 20 years go?"
Okay,
like
you
that's,
could.
That's a thing you could be thinking, right?
And then you actually you look at your daughters that are like,
yeah,
and you go like,
"That's where they went."
That's where they went. Yeah, ugh, you these, can see that. You can see. Oh, you, did these, you just go yuck?
Ugh, these energy vampires. That's where it all went.
They one oh, of them my, listens to the show.
Oh my potency. Oh my, my youth. Potency. Oh, swallowed up by these little. Dark
that's why,
energy vampires.
That's why Dracula just looks like Cal.
I am just kidding, everybody.
When he had his daughters in the Hammer films, then he really started to let himself go.
Someone was telling me yesterday.
By the way, I know whenever you say I've got nothing to talk about, you're going to have a hell of a lot to talk about.
No, no.
Those are the shows that you say the most because otherwise you usually come in with a plan, a little book, or a box of quiz notes or some sort of things or some food someone sent us from overseas.
Yeah.
And then you're ready to go. And then you run out of that and then you're done. But when you say I've got nothing, settle in, everyone. It's going to be a long one.
I don't think so. But
every time.
I just want to – this is a little thing just mentioning. Uh-huh.
Since
I was mean to my daughters, I just want to say one thing.
When were you mean to your daughters?
Just now.
Oh, just now.
I call them energy vampires, which is true. Children are.
Everyone loves vampires.
Children are
energy
vampires.
Especially young people
vampires.
Nowadays, they love a vampire.
They do. These are different sort of vampires.
Okay.
But I was talking to someone at work yesterday, and they're telling me about a person they know who does not like his kids. Like, he just speaks to them in the most, you know.
I know someone else he doesn't like. The guy in the mirror.
Maybe so.
You bet he does. Like, he doesn't like that guy. How can you, if you don't like your kids, you do not like yourself. You do not think, I'm great, my kids are assholes.
Yeah.
You can think your kids are assholes, but you think you're an asshole too.
Well, when I heard that, it made me very sad. Like, sad for him and for his kids. Like, what kind of father are you if you don't appreciate your kids? Like, you don't think they're like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm.
And sliced bread's pretty great. I think we all agree on that. Otherwise,
well,
it wouldn't be that expression.
Do you have a lot of friends who have kids that are the same age as yours?
I like to call them frenemies.
Okay, that's right. Rivals.
No, I don't.
Fighting clans.
To be honest with you, no. I mean, the closest.
I think that's where this comes from. Then
the closest thing that I mean, would be my brother-in-law.
Okay.
His children are you know in the ballpark of my daughters.
All right. And I don't.
In fact, younger nephew, and Mary are the same age. So they're right in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which means you and your brother were having sex at the exact same time.
Brother-in-law
were having sex at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's creepy. Anyway, the point, what I'm trying
I'm
to
sure
make
me
is...
I'm sure me and other people are doing that as well.
Really?
If you think about, well, how many people are dying every day? How many people are being born? And also, how many people are fucking? I'm sure there's a lot of simultaneous fucking going on.
Yeah, but I'm saying of all those things, no one is listening to this podcast while doing those things.
It's probably what helps make the world spin, is all the people's, you know...
Dying?
No.
Being born?
Fucking.
Oh, fucking. Okay. Yeah. Sure. It powers it.
Yeah.
No, but I think like if you were to look at, if you knew like a lot of other parents that were of your age and with your age children, you'd probably see a few that are just like, these kids. Because I know like when I was growing up, there were mums and dads who definitely thought their kids were a pain in the ass. So you could tell them.
Mm.
You could tell there was that contempt when they would try to tell them something and they'd get the eye roll and just like, ugh. You know, there's that. And you're like, ugh, that's no good. That's not good at all. And, you know, that's, you know, but you're different, I think. You know, I hope that you're not the exception to the rule with how much that you love being around your kids. But we've talked about this on the show before. But you love hanging out with your kids. And that's not a standard parent thing to do. It's like, oh boy, I get to hang out with the kids. And the kids aren't, oh boy, I get to hang out with the old man. Like, that's not,
that's
you know,
true.
Most people don't have Scout and Atticus but relationships. You'd go out and shoot a rabid dog for your kids, wouldn't you?
Okay.
Mary comes in
yes,
and goes,
I would.
Pa, there's a rabid dog out. You'd take Eve and you'd dress her as a ham and send her off to school.
That's true. I would do that. Sure. And let her come home at night in a really bulky ham suit.
You check your doors for Boo Radleys every night.
Every night. Actually, Atticus,
did you have a dog named Boo?
We do have a dog named Boo Radley. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, that's right. I thought you did. Yeah. I was going, that can't be right, but it is true.
It's true.
You are a damn Atticus Finch.
I do love
you
that.
You literally are Atticus Finch.
Well, we just love that book. But
okay.
Yeah. That. I mean, I would have loved for my dad to be interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
which I don't think he was all that interested in us.
Did you ever meet his father?
Oh, yeah.
And was like, his father interested in his son?
Oh, no, not at all.
There we go.
Oh, no, I know.
May
I
the
know.
Circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by. Yeah, that's how it goes.
I guess so, but I mean, did I break the circle? I broke the circle.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I'm not a very nice person, breaking people's circles.
Yeah, with love.
With love. It's a weird, yeah, it's kind
of funny.
Circle
of apathy.
Like when I go to, if I go, I did this more when the girls were younger, but we would go to my brother-in-law's cabin.
Okay.
And so
was it haunted like in the movies?
It's, yes, it has this bench swinging against the wall. And you're like, yeah. Well, why did you put the bench in that direction? That seems odd, but anyway.
Yeah. Why do you have the root cellar? It's really creepy.
Why?
You really need to grow your own gourds?
That's right. Why not finish your basement? You know? You're a professor. You've got money.
Why is this poster for the Hills Have Eyes up here?
Why is this university professor living in a cabin that looks like it's lived in by yokels? It looks like Little Abner's house. Why is the university professor there? Mm-hmm. He should have a place like On Golden Pond.
Yep.
That's the kind of house you want if you're a university
professor.
Oh, don't
you want to see a sequel to On Golden Pond that's a horror thing where they go to that cabin and then some shit goes down?
Sure.
Haunted Henry Fonda, like freaking everyone out.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. And with Catherine Hepburn, just hearing that. Oh, that's good stuff.
So we would go to the cabin. And, you know, there'd be my nephews there and my daughters. And then there'd be my brother-in-law and sister-in-law. And then some of their friends would often be there as well. Mm-hmm. So they'd be out by the bonfire.
Right.
Stuff like that. I would be downstairs with the kids playing video games.
Okay.
Like, to me, that's way more interesting to be hanging around with the kids than to be hanging out with boring old adults who have nothing in common with, really.
Well, I remember that was a thing at when my mother was dating a different fella, and there was a whole bunch of family members. And I think I might have told this story before. I'll tell it again really quickly. Where they brought all the kids over for like some holiday.
This story.
Yeah, this old chestnut. But all the kids are like, and they're having fun, right? Mm-hmm. They're all having fun.
Sure.
And then at one point, a couple of the parents are there too. Mm-hmm. And the parents are doing the eye rolls of, oh, boy. And the kids are having fun.
Yeah.
And they're like teenagers. And it's tough for teenagers to have fun at someone else's house because it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and then at one point, okay, that's enough. Everyone downstairs. And so they get banished downstairs.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go like, I'm not with these assholes. I was fine hearing you guys talking. This is fine. You're all having a good time.
Yeah.
And I was like, finally. And then they go down there. And then one of the kids starts playing the piano and they start singing. They're doing musical numbers down there. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to tell them to shut up. What the fuck is your problem? Tell them to shut up.
Were they real songs that they were really playing the piano?
They were playing. They were doing nice musical numbers. It's like Glee broke out down there. And we're the mean parents from Footloose going, stop dancing. Stop it. And it was just like awful. And then later on, I mentioned this to my mom and just went, you know what you guys did, right? You banished them down there for having a good time, not being jerks. And then when they start having a, you know, actually doing something creative and productive down there, instead of, I don't know, smoking anything or stealing our shit, then you're like, oh, those guys with their musical numbers. Is that the worst thing you've ever heard? Fuck. It just made me crazy. Like every time I saw any of those kids later, I was so nice to all of them. Just like, that sounded great. That was really good. But, you know, I'm part of the fucking old folks upstairs who are like, we banish thee from Eden. Cast thee out.
Yeah.
Your musical dancing.
In fact, maybe it's the ultimate compliment that my nephew a little while ago said, they're actually talking about this. And then he said, it's funny. I don't think of Dave as an adult. And I thought, well, I guess that's a compliment. I am not really very adult-y.
Well, yeah, the negative sides of being an adult, which is the ugh.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, I'm an adult in the sense that I work and, you know.
Yeah, do adult stuff.
Do adult stuff.
Fix the house.
Somewhere.
Make breakfast.
Yeah.
Make sure everyone doesn't starve.
Done sort of little bits like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I find it,
I don't want to toot my own horn, everybody.
And I wonder where it comes from. I wonder where that frustration comes. I guess like anything you're around too long might seem irritating to you. But the idea that your kids' voices would be really irritating to you after that amount of time. And that's clearly what it was.
Yeah.
They were all just like goofing and laughing and not in a negative way, but it was just like, can't stand this. Well, this is obvious. And if you're doing this in public,
yeah,
this kind of thing, then by God, you must be doing it. But I've heard that so much from, and again, the thing I always get told is like, you don't have kids, you don't understand. If you had kids, you'd know how frustrated you get. You get so upset, and it's like 24/7, and you don't know what these little monsters are like all the time. You see them when they're great. You see them when they're da da da. It's like, maybe I treat them with respect when I fucking see them, and so they're kind of nice to me, and I don't fucking see. And I think there's a frustration with quite a few parents I know that I don't see their kids at their worst. You know, but yeah, I don't know. And maybe that is true. But I like hearing it from you, who is a parent, who they can't say that to. That no, just like your kids.
Be around your kids. Would. To me, that's weird. Like to say you don't see your kids at your worst. I mean, all parents get angry at their kids at some point. Yeah, but
you're people.
Yes, exactly. But
I think what matters then is like what happens after that. You know, do you let that cook and build up and?
Well, after they're let out of the dungeon after 20 days.
Yeah.
They know what they know. They did something wrong.
Yeah, and they need an orange because it got scurvy at that point.
That's right.
Eating rat meat
from the lawnmower.
Yeah,
as a callback to an old story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one. Okay.
But it's just weird when someone says that to you, like, "Oh, he didn't like his kids." You just feel like, "Oh, like what's the point? Like what's the point? Like you've married like so." Basically, what he did was he married a woman. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason.
Or nowadays, a man and adopted some kids and then hated those folks.
That seems less likely to me. Mm-hmm. If you have to go to that kind of trouble to get kids, then you're gonna appreciate those kids.
That is an interesting question. And I actually know a couple of gay parents. I wonder if that is a thing. If you have to go to adopt or you have to go through the, your surrogate or you got to do all that kind of stuff, does that make you more invested than someone who's, well, I guess this is what we got. Here's another one coming on the way. I wonder.
I'll ask my priest at church.
Okay.
He has an adopted son. I'll ask, how do you and your husband feel about, like you feel like you've made some giant,
do you feel more resentment that trouble you think, you've than gone others? To. Yeah. And then you say to him, I know you're not supposed to tell me what other people say about their lives, but tell me. Let's
right.
dish.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Spill it. Spill the beans.
A couple of bucks in the old, the collection plate.
Sure.
You get a little story or two.
Nothing makes a church happier than if you put $2 in the collection plate. it's going to open all the doors for you.
Yeah.
We're like, tank.
Yeah, the same amount you put in a claw machine.
He's going to open more doors than that. But a couple of dollars in the collection plate.
Now, this morning you made a post that was pro-wife.
Yes. That's what's called leaving your Facebook profile on and forgetting to log out.
My gosh.
That's the second time she's stung me in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, dear. Okay, I thought I was going to get another positive story
It's kind of funny. Like, I'm kind of, hey, I love my wife. I love her to death.
But you kid.
But
you remember that cartoon book?
I love my wife, but you kid?
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but I remember it being like a 1930s thing. Like I've seen like drawings of cars from the, cartoons from the 30s, and they'll write that on like the side of a car. Like it's a bunch of university students with their raccoon coats and
that might be the oldest reference we've made on here that wasn't one of your relatives' minstrel shows.
23 Skidoo Daddy Oak.
Yeah, pretty much. It's around that era.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway.
There's a wonderful Robert Benchley article where he's writing, he's like, doing a transcript of a university paper or college paper of that time, trying to get their stuff together, and there's the one guy who's kind of like, come on, guys, you got to be serious here, and someone's there, vote Odio. Listen, fellas, we really need to get this stuff out. This is this long transcript. It's quite good, actually. It's quite, feels quite real if you've ever tried to herd cats, like that.
And he's the person who wrote what became A Christmas Story, right? Robert Benchley? Different guy.
Yeah, a different guy. Robert Benchley. Well, he was in films, but he mostly did shorts.
Okay.
They were kind of funny, like How to Sleep. And, that's one I've seen by him. And he always did
other... Sounds like some clips we're going to have to put up online.
Yeah, it'd be fun to find those, actually. I've never thought of looking for him on YouTube. Because they played them for a while in TMC.
Yeah.
And I always felt like, oh, that's a place I should keep looking for.
Sure.
Not going on YouTube. And that would have been smart, actually, now that I think about it.
It's not too late. You're not 50 yet.
Thanks for reminding me that YouTube exists.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. But he was, he was a friend of, Dorothy,
Parker?
Lady. Dorothy Parker, yeah. And they were drinking buddies. too much drinking buddies.
Was he part of the Algonquin Roundtable?
Neither of them really were part of the Algonquin Roundtable. Okay. They were kind of satellites of that scene. But both of them, and like James Thurber and people like that, they were kind of like the up-and-comers that didn't quite come to that.
I always wondered how that table tipped. They tipped well or if they were jerks.
I'm sure they were jerks. I'm pretty sure.
Do you think, though, they get it out of their system and then they go like, we're going to be nice to the waitstaff?
Did they eat that much? I think they mostly just drank.
Yeah, but you still tip when you drink.
I mean, who was the Algonquin Roundtable? You don't really remember them anymore.
I can't.
Alexander Wolcott. I know for sure.
Okay, you're on your own here.
George S. Kaufman. And then he wrote like the coconuts and animal crackers for Marx Brothers. Edna Ferber, which is weird. She was a novelist. She wrote like Giant, the movie that James Dean film. And So Big. Like, she wrote these novels with hilarious names. Her novels are full of like jet rink.
By the way, I love that you're like, yeah, who can remember all those names? Anyway, here's all those names.
I'm starting to run out now, though. Those are the three like big ones that I can remember.
It's not that big a table. It's fine.
But I mean, yeah, it wasn't. And, you know, there were maybe Harpo Marx would be considered one of that group. I know that he was friends with, I can't remember who else. Yeah, I can't. Yeah.
I wonder if they are the types that would have made fun of the waitstaff, though, or if they would just like hit the higher ups and each other and give all those keep all the zingers for the kingdom and not for the servants. You know, and if so, would they? I always wonder if people tip.
Yeah.
Like, I was wondering that kind of thing. Like, if you're.
Well, it almost feels like, to me, the Algonquin Roundtable almost feels more like kind of self-gloss.
Yeah.
You know, like self-promotion than an actual thing that existed. Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, okay, we can name some Dorothy Parker quips that have come down through the ages, you know, run the gamut of emotions from A to B, you know, when I loved by her. But
boys don't make passes at girls who wear glasses.
There you go. Great poem. But, you know, like what great things did George S. Kaufman say? I mean, he wrote some great plays, but what hilarious things did he say at the round? Like, this doesn't seem to have come down to
it. If only we could go to the internet and find out those hilarious things.
Like, Wolcott was more like I think he wrote a book, but mostly his fame was from doing radio.
Okay.
He would do like a kind of a radio talks. He was quite famous. And there's that, have you ever seen the film, The Man Who Came to Dinner?
Yep.
Where the guy breaks his foot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's based on Wolcott.
Oh,
that
nice.
Character
okay.
who gets stuck in the house. And
seen the film, I've seen the play.
Is a tyrant. Yeah, that's based on Wolcott. And he was more known for like doing radio talks and doing like anthologies of other people's writings. That was sort of his, you know, he would like name the great books of that time period, you know, and he was just sort of like this sort of, I don't know what to quite call him. He was sort of like a culture maven or whatever, you know, like, so people would be like, ooh, Alexander Wolcott said this book is good, so it must be good. Now, maybe he was the Oprah of his time.
Now, I got a question. You're sort of tangenting off this a little bit, but speaking of people that did anthologies and that sort of stuff, Bennett Cerf,
mm-hmm.
What's his deal? Because like when I was a kid, here's how I knew Bennett Cerf.
Yeah.
One, from his books of riddles.
Yes.
Because we'd always have the Bennett Cerf books of riddles.
Mm-hmm.
What's big red and eats rocks? A big red rock eater.
Good
that
one.
That was a cover joke.
I had a pop-up book of his.
Very good. Riddles. And then you'd see him on old game shows,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be the witty guy on old game shows.
Yeah.
But like all people on old game shows, I had no idea what they did for real.
Who are they? Who's Kitty Carlisle?
Who is Kitty Carlisle?
Yeah, what is she doing on this show? Like, yeah. You had no idea who they were. Like, you never.
Brett Summers. Sorry, I'm going a couple of years ahead now.
Yeah, you're jumping
Brett
ahead.
Summers, who was on Match Game because she was the wife of Jack Klugman, but turned out to be funnier than Jack Klugman. So when he went, bring my wife on with me. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, okay, we're inviting her back. Sorry, Jack. What? And went
you're
on
no
to,
good.
But it's okay. He went on to do other things. But like,
he had some minor fame.
Was Bennett Cerf a novelist? Was he a short story writer? Did he do work in film? What was his deal?
No,
Okay,
I'm going to talk off the top of my head. This is without any factual knowledge.
All right.
But so I believe
it's what you usually do.
From what I think is he was.
This is Dave, who, when we had our Beatles podcast, called one of the guys Stingo for like, I don't know how long. Yeah, just Mr. Make-em-ups.
Stingo Rar. And Bennett Cerf, I think, was like, you know, kind of a well-off guy.
Sorry, that's if Ringo Starr and Sting had a baby. That's what their baby
Stingo
would be called.
Rar.
Stingo Rar.
Stingo
Sumner was what they'd call him. Yeah.
You don't need to correct it any further. Yeah, I think he was, again, kind of a well-off guy. And I believe, though, that he was the sort of editor-in-chief or like the head of Doubleday Books or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So he had a really high position there. and was quite well respected. But yeah, he did a lot of like anthologizing of stuff, but he probably put his name to other people's work. Mm. You know what I mean? So he would say to people, you know, I need 200 riddles by tomorrow, and then we're going to put out Bennett Cerf's joke book. And they'd be like, right on it, chief. So yeah. I don't know how much.
He feels like an editor to me.
Yeah, I think that's what he was most well known for.
That's one thing I look at. I look at old timey shows like that and go, ah, there was, you could just be a wit.
Well, you know,
back then, and you can in England still. Mm-hmm. There are channels where that's all they do in England. It's like you sit around a table. Right. There's a loose format for a game, but fuck it, who cares about the game? Sure. We're just all going to just like be witty to each other.
That's right. That's what we need.
We do need. The closest thing they've got right now is At Midnight in the States, where they ripped off like kind of that British format, but we don't have that.
Yeah.
You know, we've tried to do, we did Match Game again for some reason. I don't know why, but that's, I think that might even still exist. But it's not enough room for the people to be witty. It's just too short.
Is it the new Match Game?
Yeah, it's the new Match Game. It's good people. Sean Cullen's funny. Everyone's funny.
Sure, but Sean Cullen is he's funny as a surreal stream of consciousness comic, you know.
Yeah, and like, you can't do that in one thing. It's just like, and then hold
one
it up.
1 second.
Yeah, buttons. That's all. It's not enough.
Yeah, yeah. I loved it. He used to do a radio show on CBC. He would play like kind of new music, very new music. But he would do these rambling 5-minute monologues before every song. So maybe he'd play like 7 songs in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd also get him like just talking away. It was good.
Yeah, he reminds me a bit of, and again, he came first, but Paul F. Tompkins. And then he's another guy who is very good doing the long improv bits, and then we'll start singing. You go, what a glorious voice!
Yeah. So I do love my wife, though.
But you'll bring us back to do.
Yeah, it's just funny.
By the way, let me say for the record, I also love my wife.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see you writing it on Facebook.
No, because I know how to change my password.
I just forgot to log
out. She's too busy. She's more popular on her own damn like Twitters and whatever than I. Like, she doesn't need to get onto my sad sack.
Insert writing.
I don't
about
know.
It.
Like maybe more than 1,000 Twitter followers. That's it, and she's way up there.
I do love her. It just feels wrong to me to write about
your wife.
No, to write about yourself on someone else's Facebook.
No. When you're on someone else's Facebook,
yeah,
you should write something mean that they're saying about themselves.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm quitting my job.
Yeah,
screw all you guys. Right. I'm not coming to the office today. Any of you reading this,
which is fine because none of my workmates are on Facebook with me, so that's fine.
There you go. And then you put that up, and everyone goes, Dave, what a bold choice. Good for you.
It's I'm like, Dave. No. I'm dumb. I like to eat poo.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Guys, listen, no one ever give me sugar again. No matter what I say, never give me any sweet candy. Ever, ever, ever.
Yeah.
I ask you that as a friend.
That's right. The doctor has told me if I have any more sugar, I will die. Die.
Die of joy.
Please,
everyone.
Diabetes.
I'm almost 50. I cannot have sweets anymore. 50-year-olds cannot eat candy.
Is that what happens to them?
Yep.
They just fade away.
You get sour mouth.
So it's so sad. They're so sad. Sour mouth. That's true. I think my mom has that.
Well, do you have any issues when you turned 40?
No.
Yeah, you're fine then.
I think I went through my midlife crisis around 35.
Okay.
I got in early. I left my wife, married a different woman who looks a lot like my wife. She might have tricked me actually. But I think that was the time.
You lived the pina colada song.
I did. You like going on walks on the beach too?
Yeah. You were tired of your lady. You'd been together
too long. Uh-huh. Yeah. We both liked margaritas, which I don't think I've ever actually had a margarita.
No, you
but
don't
I like
have
I like
to.
The idea of them.
You could have a virgin margarita. I think you'd enjoy that. It's basically a Slurpee.
I like the platonic idea of a margarita.
Sure. So you'd only drink one with like a friend.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think I just went through early. I think I had like an early onset midlife crisis.
Okay.
Maybe because of the cancer. I don't know if that was sort of a near death experience. If that kind of colored, you know. Kind of brought those sort of changes earlier. I don't know. My feeling now about aging is, you know, it beats the alternative. That's the thing I always say. So
yeah.
When people complain, oh, I'm getting so old, I say, well, you know, there's no way to stop it.
Yeah. There's only one way to stop it. You know?
Yeah.
And what's the thing that I always like, look at this, which is like, what's the thing that you can't do now that you wanted to do that you would do when you're younger?
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe to me, it's like, skiing?
Yeah,
like
that'd be difficult.
The other day we were like looking at, me and my wife were looking at some ice skaters. We were thinking of, I was like, oh man, you fall? That's rough. Yeah. I don't know if that's worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, you land on your hand, you can't draw anymore. You land on this, you can't do this. It's just like, oh, falling is no good. No. We were just, I'm not going to say who we were talking to. We were just talking to a gentleman just before we came up here, and he's got a sling on.
Yeah.
He's going like, I fell.
Yes.
And you don't have to go anything farther than that. It's not like you're a kid going like, what horrible accident did you have?
Sure.
You know, were you riding your dirt bike and stood on the seat and did all, it's just like, no, he's around our age. What happened? I fell down. Now my arm's all breaky
because
I fell down.
Yeah, he made a missed a step and just fell forward.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's, you fall down, you break a breaker. You're Mr. Glass from Unbreakable.
No, that was, yeah, I was going to say that was one thing that I do regret about getting older is that I can't like pretend to fall down the stairs anymore. Because it's more dangerous than it was when I was
but
in my
30s. But once your prime minister can do it, isn't it already mainstream enough?
Well, yeah.
It's not edgy. You know. It's just like, okay. The prime minister can do it and does it well.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
It's not cool anymore. It's like when McDonald's does this type of music and you're like in their ads, it's over, right?
Yeah.
You got the rapping Hamburglar. That type of rap is done now,
I hope
right?
They have rap. I hope it goes away. Isn't rap over anyway?
See, now you're sounding 50.
I think it's done.
That's good stuff. Now, if you could go after hipsters, you'd really sound 50. That'd be good stuff.
Those damn hipsters.
That music today is not like the music I would listen to back in the day when the old people would say, what's this music that I'm listening to? I don't like it like the music I listen to. Anyway, I've got to turn to ash now. Goodbye. Poof.
I still like modern music. I
put me on the mantle.
I'm still pretty hip music-wise.
Good.
But yeah. I mean, I still have select tastes in music. You know, my music is best. That's what my select taste tells me.
Fair enough.
You know, I don't want any. I will brook no argument.
Do you know who else feels that way?
I will brook no argument.
Everybody feels that way. That's good.
I will brook no argument.
That's right. You will Brooks and Dunn no argument. No, because they are the best.
The worst.
We did a thing yesterday where we do this Dungeons and Dragons show.
They are Brooks. They are Brooks and Dunn.
And we had to do a pun about like there was these. Ducks with hammers, whatever.
Okay.
So let's just, whatever. Let's just say there was ducks with giant hammers.
Uh-huh.
They were attacking us. And then, and Sean Stewart, former guest of the show, makes a joke about how they must like the Miami Vice theme. Well,
wow.
The audience just went quiet. So they're like, because, you know, it was written by Jan Hammer.
Yeah, Jan Hammer.
To which I turned to him and go, you didn't go for can't touch this. You went Miami Vice. Jan Hammer is your reference?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, well, you know, people know Jan Hammer. Okay. God bless.
Yeah.
God bless. You just, sure. God bless. Well, and at that point, I watched him turn to ash. I put him in an urn, and I put him on the mantle.
He didn't blow away? Well, that's lucky. Lucky you're indoors when it happened. Yeah, well, you know, he's a big fan of the rheostatics.
Yeah.
That's about
it. Well, people used to be scared that if you punch someone who was skinny too hard, they'd dry up and blow away. I'm remembering my Charles Atlas.
Is correctly. That right?
Yeah, that was the thing. It's just like,
I don't
the this is the thing for the insult that made a man out of Mac.
Yeah.
Is, you know, the big guy is on the beach and he's kicking sand.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, that man's the biggest menace on the beach. Girlfriend, I don't know. He's with a woman.
Yeah.
Don't let it bother you, little boy. And it's like, hey, stop it. And then he picks him up and goes like, I'd hit you, but you're so skinny, you'd probably dry up and blow away. Like, so the guy's not going to hit him. And then the guy gets revenge for that insult by coming back and smacking the guy in the face. Like, years later, when he's built up the big physique and clocked him.
I don't think it's supposed to be years later.
Okay, how long does it take to get that physique? Not a summer. Unless they live in Hawaii.
Apparently, you can do it in a summer.
And get that full muscle mat. So he's juicing like nobody's business.
I don't know. It's
like
dynamic tension.
The max.
Dynamic tension.
Okay, your maximum on this is 4 months.
Dynamic
tension. Our minimum is 4 months.
Yeah. It has to be next year, right?
It has to be the next year.
Because there's no way that in 2 months, like, they're not still on the beach at Christmas time.
Absolutely they're not. Yeah. And again, maybe they're Hawaii. Maybe they live in Hawaii.
I don't think
beach
so.
All year long.
I'm not going to
say
that.
But let's say.
Let's face it. This is New York.
It's the next year.
It's New Jersey.
So a guy threatens a guy, insults him, does not hit him. Says, listen, shut up.
Yeah.
Next year, pow!
Yeah.
Not the guy doesn't know Well, who are you?
Yeah.
You're clearly a different man than the skinny guy I knew before.
Yeah.
This girl has not been waiting on the beach for you this whole time. She's probably moved on with her life.
Sure.
But now she's back with Muscles McGee.
He's a real clam chowder.
And she's surprised.
As we learned from our slang quiz, 1930s there beach slang quiz. Yeah.
And she is surprised by his muscles. So he's ditched her for a year.
Yeah.
He hasn't talked to her, his girlfriend slash friend.
Well, I don't think that she's really his friend. The way she treats him tells me that.
Why'd she come to the beach with him?
Well, it was prospective date sort of thing, you know. Turns out.
Perspective, he looks terrible, but like she saw him from a distance and thought maybe it's okay.
They met in the pen pals. They met like through the personals.
Yeah. Once again, this is the days, if you look at that ad, when the worst thing you could be was skinny.
Yeah.
Hey, skinny, nice job. Guy who doesn't have a lot of weight on him. So skinny, huh? Get some weight, jerk. And same with the women, too. There was ads for like women showing how they could pack on some pounds because don't be a skinny mini or whatever.
Yeah.
And then beat up the semi-fat guy, the guy with the Robert Mitchum type figure. Give him a little whack in the push.
What I love about you telling that story is I redrew that entire cartoon for a title card.
Yeah.
Like, I redrew the whole thing because I couldn't get a good enough reproduction. Yep. So I don't remember any of those words. So I obviously wasn't paying attention to the words I was writing.
Don't you think that the next chapter of that story is Robert Mitchum type guy goes, oh, I got hit in the face at the beach by a stranger.
Yeah.
I'm going to take this Charles Atlas course.
Yeah.
Next year, he comes around, builds on his thing. Hopefully, that guy's kept his maintenance. And now those two are like fighting on the beach forever because they're equally strong.
You bring up Robert Mitchum. I'm just going to make a brief detour to a book you...
Talk about deodorant.
A book you lent me called The Comedians by Cliff Nesroff. Cliff Nesroff. Really good book, by the way.
Yeah, it's gotten some nice rating.
Have you read it all or have you just dipped into it?
I've just dipped into it, but there was an interesting thing today that Cliff wrote on his Facebook page. We're just talking Facebook now.
Yeah.
Don't worry,
folks. Is this yesterday you're talking about?
Might be yesterday, might be today.
Is this a David Letterman thing?
No.
Oh, okay.
But what he was saying was there was a review and it said, you know, and you read it and you're going to get angry. And Cliff went, finally someone gets it. And it's like, yeah, these stories should at some point make you angry at like how the industry is run and frustrate you and make you go,
okay.
Instead of, oh, that's the way it is. Like, no, you should get a little bit hot under the collar over it.
Interesting.
But we can talk about the other thing in a bit, but tell me what you
Well,
thought.
No, it's just he was talking about... A comedian of the time, a female.
Now, what is the time we're talking?
This was 50s.
All right.
And she was a ribald comedian who would do kind of dirty songs,
now,
often
is this
song
the
parodies.
Is this the woman who Catherine O'Hara parodied on SCTV?
I do not know.
Where it was like Rusty...
Not Rusty Warren. No, no.
Okay.
But of that ilk.
All right.
But her brother wrote all her material for her. And apparently, if you paid money, he would write, you know, dirty songs for you too. He would do these apparently hilarious parodies of popular songs and stuff like that. And it turns out it was Robert Mitchum was her brother who wrote these songs. And I said. I was like, wow. So that's how he started out. He started out writing, you know, these kind of semi-pornographic parodies of
popular songs. Well, now I wish I could do a Robert Mitchum impression and I would do him singing a semi-dirty song. Was this for party albums?
It was live, but she was often censored or arrested for lewd behavior on stage and stuff like that.
That is the softest job cop could have.
Yes.
Just like wait and like arrest a comedian.
Yeah. But that was not uncommon at that time for people to get arrested for singing stuff that was lewd. About the only comedians who were able to get away with it were the black comics who just didn't face the same kind of...
Like a Red Fox.
Like a Red Fox, stuff like that, who apparently was very, very blue.
Mm-hmm.
Very.
Have you ever heard any of his party albums?
I have not.
Go to the YouTube. You can listen to some of them and go, oh my lord. They're all just old dirty jokes, though.
Yeah.
You know, filthy dirty jokes. It's really weird when you go like, and then he became the most mainstream guy on
Yeah,
Stanford
the sort of
son.
Beloved...
Yeah,
old crusty
but
old
that's
man.
The same thing with everybody, right?
Like Buddy Hackett, too.
Yeah, Buddy Hackett. That was the thing. Everyone who was a filthy, filthy comic later became like a kid's kind of thing. You see him on Sesame Street.
Mm-hmm.
Or Richard Pryor would have a show on Saturday morning and it'd be Pryor's Place. And you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah. George Carlin, Shining Time Station. He's the conductor.
Sure.
That's George the seven words you can't say around trains. That guy.
You can't say on trains.
Yeah. Sure, either and or around, about. And there you go. You go like, you'd never think like these would be the guys, but like whoever the filthy guys, you know, it's, I always think like if Lenny Bruce had lived, he would have had a hell of a kid show later. Don't you think? Maybe. Everyone else did.
Maybe. I don't know. It's possible. I mean, we can't see the future, but
yeah,
possibly.
You know, like Sam Kinison would be like a do a puppet screaming how to count numbers and stuff on Sesame Street, right?
Sure.
Of course he would.
Sure.
They all. That's what the.
I just read about Albert Brooks, so I'm sort of in the late 60s, I guess, early 70s. I've reached in the book. I've read it chronologically rather than dipping in and out of it.
Okay.
So. Because I was really interested in the vaudeville period. I was kind of, oh, this is... Because it was supposed to mention Buster Keaton. It did a little bit, but...
But not enough for your taste?
Not enough for my taste.
No, you know what? I say you talk enough. To Cliff, he'll
But
he'll
apparently the most violent act of its day. The Three Keatons. Yeah.
It was called The Three Keatons, and what made it violent?
Just Joe's treatment of his son Buster.
Why don't you tell our audience what you're talking about?
Well, he would do things like pick his son up and throw him into the audience from the stage. So not just, and not into like a suspecting, you know, ringer who would catch him. No, just right into the audience. So he'd land in amongst the seats.
How old was he at this time?
So I think he started like when he's 6 years old doing this stuff. And then he would do a thing where he would swing I guess it was Buster who would do that. He would stand on a table and swing a ball on a rope.
Yeah.
And then his father would, you know, he would hit his father with it. And it was a lot of, there's a lot of rigmarole. Joaquin was famous for his high kick. He could do a high kick and kick a person near his head. He wouldn't actually kick a person in the head unless he was drunk. And as his drinking kind of took over in the later years, he would actually kick Buster Keaton in the head during the act.
Right.
But it was early on that Keaton, who didn't mind these things, like he enjoyed performing.
Right.
But he learned early on that if he laughed during the show, the audience didn't laugh.
Mm.
So he had to keep a straight face. That's where he developed his deadpan expression. Because if he smiled or seemed to be enjoying himself, then the audience didn't think it was funny.
He was the opposite of Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon has a smile?
He laughs at all his own jokes, yeah.
Someone should.
It's very popular, this show. It's very popular.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the number one of all the talk shows.
That always means it's the best.
He's turning 50, he's set in his ways. Speaking of things from the past.
Yes.
We are going to get to the topic that you set up last week, by the way.
Okay.
But you mentioned Cliff Nesterhoff and something that I put online connecting, which was Cliff put up a clip of David Letterman from 1977 here in Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
By the way, here comes a siren, so if you would like to take a drink, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to judge you. Guess what it is? Is it a police car? Is it an ambulance? Is it a fire truck?
Was it an ambulance?
It was an ambulance. Take another drink if you guessed ambulance. but there used to be a show on TV called
I like that game now. I like that you've added that twist to it.
Yeah.
It's made it better.
Called Celebrity Cooks.
Yes.
Now, I'm not sure.
Hosted by?
Let me just set up before we do this.
Okay.
If it later became Celebrity Microwaves or if it started as Celebrity Microwaves.
Couldn't have been.
Why is that?
In 77, were there microwaves like commonly used in
all
people's
right.
houses?
Well, at some point, either it evolved into Celebrity microwaves.
Like, I don't remember getting a microwave in our house until I was in junior high. So
okay,
that would have been
this
early,
is fancy CBC
early
money.
80s.
But yeah, it was a show. Well, why don't you say who it was hosted by?
You can say it. You're talking about it.
It was Bruno Gerussi.
It was Bruno Gerussi.
Who was the star of? Dave's a Goof. who was the star
Dave's
of the Beachcombers?
Star of the Beachcombers.
And so they decided to give him this little show, and it was a cooking show, but it was like he came, Bruno Gerussi would come out every time, very hip, very unbuttoned shirt, the kind of thing where you should probably have a hairnet over your chest hair
if
you're going to do some cooking for these people, and like, hey, how's it all going? Good to see you all. How about that weather out there? That's quite weather.
Well, yeah.
I didn't have a monologue. I'm just going to talk a little bit.
I'm going to observe something.
Yep. You know,
it's
rainy out there.
Well, it's not rainy. It's snowing.
Oh, well, he's talking about the snow in Vancouver at that time. Go ahead. You're obviously wanting to take this. So go.
No.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah. He just says it's interesting because what's interesting to me about it was that, David Letterman's on the show.
Yeah.
But the problem with the show was that that night was that there was
no audience.
Apparently 1 inch of snow in Vancouver, which, by the way, in Vancouver, causes the city to stop.
Yeah, so the city shut down because it was 1 inch of snow. Why am I talking like this? Because this is how Bruno Gerussi talks on the show for some reason.
Yeah.
But not like this at all in the Beachcombers. On the Beachcombers, he talks like this.
Yeah.
And it's very aggressive. And it's like... very DJ-ish.
So...
very swinger.
So in a way, it's almost a kind of an apology to David Letterman. That he's not going to have much of an audience when he comes out. It's sort of an acknowledgement to him. Like, listen, You got five people here. There's going to be no laughter.
It's going to be rough.
It's going to be rough. And so, yeah, then Letterman comes out, which is kind of cool to see David Letterman at that time. I actually have not seen him.
You don't see him do stand-up then.
Very often.
And they introduce him as like, he's a great writer.
Yeah.
He's written for Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Yeah.
He's written and list a couple other names that you're just like, ooh, that's old, those are old-timey names.
Mm, yeah.
And that's about it. You know, he's an up-and-coming comedian.
Yeah, yeah. And he comes out and he does, it's an okay act. It's a good, okay act. It would be better if the audience was there. Yeah. There's more laughter.
Did you find it was weird that they would mention that he would be a writer for another comedian? Isn't that a strange thing to have as a credit?
Yeah. Well, that the credits he gave.
Yeah, you would never have that like nowadays. Yeah. It's just, you know, a very popular comedian. It's just he's a writer for Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
And here he is with jokes that didn't get bought.
Yeah.
Here's David Letterman.
And that's interesting. But also what's amusing is the fact that there's someone in the audience who talks to him during his act.
Yes.
Like, that's just weird. Like some old lady.
Just starts talking.
There's some old lady who doesn't understand. Yeah. This is television, Grandma. You can't start having a conversation with the guy and, you know, where'd you buy that tie? Or something, you know, I can't remember exactly what Jim
interrupts. But he got a kick out of it. Yeah. Like, and he's like, all right, here we go.
It's a small crowd and this is how it's going
to
be.
But that's a nice thing. I think like for a David Letterman to like put you back on your heels a little bit. It's like, all right, now he can go. Here we go.
Yeah.
I was listening to a talk that David Steinberg was having on a podcast, and he was saying how when he started off, he had no act, and so he was happy when someone would heckle because he could actually go after them and get some traction.
Sure.
So he's
like
happy for it, and it looked a little bit like Letterman was, you know, I can do something.
Yeah.
And then the stuff that you love of Letterman, you know, a lot of his reaction stuff, that was his strength.
It is.
It's weird that they made him do stand up before he cooked.
Yeah.
Like, just stand in front of the cooking area and do a set.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, he's going to talk to you. Here he is.
And it's interesting because they have some clips of other people, like singers, like Cleo Lane. I could recognize her. So you're thinking, like, so I guess before she started cooking, she sang a song in front of the kitchen?
Yep. Artie Johnson puts on his laughing German helmet and goes behind a bush. Does some stuff.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, the very interesting guy. I'm sure that's what he was doing.
Very interesting. And there was a guy, I've recognized him, but I don't know who he is, but he's a heavier set guy with really curly, longish hair.
Yes, that guy.
You know who I mean, right?
Yes,
I don't know
totally
who he is, but I recognize him. You're like, oh, that guy. What is he from? I saw him in the past.
Yeah, he was kind of famous for performing with the Beatles. And it was, I think, on the Ed Sullivan Show. And he had to go on before the Beatles. And they were like, oh, boo, we want the Beatles.
Not Jackie Mason.
Different guy.
Okay.
And so he came on and his opening line was, hello, because he's a weird looking fella.
Yeah.
Very weird looking fella.
Yeah.
He came on and go, hello, I'm Ringo's mother. And the others would laugh, and they were fine.
Yeah.
And he went, that saved me, and that was okay. And they liked me from that point on. And then they brought on the Beatles.
But good move on his part.
Yeah.
Unlike every other act on the show that died that night.
Yeah, that guy did do, boy, we should just look up who he is. There's a show called, it's not Make Me Laugh, but it's something along those lines. It was hosted by Monty Hall. The Joke's on Me is what it's called.
Okay.
And it was from early 80s, it must be. And so you'd have Jimmy Walker, you'd have him, you'd have Jack Carter, you'd have whoever was in town, Pete Barbuti, you'd have them all. And the whole thing was they'd do a setup for a joke, and the comedians would all do punchlines, and the contestants would have to guess what's the real punchline.
Oh, okay.
Not a great show.
No.
You can tell that's not a treat. But
when you say that, though, it's like it's one step too far for At Midnight.
Yeah.
Because really, it's just giving them a setup and doing punchlines. It's basically what At Midnight is. So.
But there's a traditional joke that one of them does the right thing to, and then Skip Stevenson does, you know, the right one. And you go, I guess Skip Stevenson. And I'm like, oh, good
Skip
for you.
Stevenson.
Yep.
He was on Make Me Laugh a lot. I actually liked Make Me Laugh a lot as a kid because I like comedians. So it was like kind of this weird showcase for
what
comics.
Comedian went on Make Me Laugh as two different characters?
Well, it would have to be Murray Langston.
There you go. As both himself and
as the unknown comic.
Yep.
Which, if you watch the Gong Show, you would have known that character quite well, because I was a big Gong Show aficionado as a kid.
Oh, I'm blanking on this one guy who was kind of a crazy face guy named Larry something.
The cable guy?
No. It was Larry something.
Sanders?
No, not even close.
Crane? Larry Crane?
No. But he was also in, like, you see him all the time. One of his big bits was he'd do dueling banjos with his face. So he'd they'd be playing like
they the play the song,
bung 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 bung, and he'd like have one of his cheeks go like, you know, to the rhythm, and then okay. the other cheek would go to the rhythm, and then his okay. whole face would go crazy okay. when okay. it's the dueling thing. That yeah, was
yeah.
his bit.
Yeah.
And if you watch, and God help you if you can find this, but if you find the 19, speaking of 1977, where we're there, that was a busy year for a lot of things. Laugh-In,
yeah.
The remake of Laugh-In with Robin Williams, with okay. Sergio Aragonés.
Okay.
This guy was like the big guy on the show.
Oh, all right.
And there'd be a thing like whenever he would do a thing, people go, go Larry, go Larry, go crazy, go crazy. And they'd wait for him to go crazy doing whatever he'd be doing. And he was huge and he was on everything and Make Me Laugh. He was all over.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then we all got tired of that, I suppose, as you do. You know, that's
I wonder where he ended up. In Las Vegas doing Zach? Or?
Boy, I will find out and I will let you know in the future,
in the future
episode. We'll
find out what his name is. And
But if you get a chance, I put the David Letterman clip on. Oh, boy, careful. You're almost 50. I'm watch almost out 50. For those coughs.
Almost 50.
Then check out our Facebook page. The Letterman clip is on there. It's very interesting to see. I didn't actually watch him make the food. Did you watch the whole thing?
I watched a bit of it, but I could tell that he was just given a recipe to do.
Yeah.
And he just kind of unwillingly did it.
Yeah, I like that when, at the very start, he's looking over and going like, what's that pot? And, we made some in advance just in case it didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Sure. All right.
Is that the spinach in there? Because there's some sort of
fettuccine verde. With spinach.
Verde. Fettuccine verde, yeah.
Yeah, the spinach makes it green. And I'll just put that in there. We're going to do this. And it's like, you know what was funny about that to me was he has the least amount of patience on his show or did for cooking segments.
Yes.
Like had no patience.
Maybe that's why. Maybe this is where it came from.
And then like,
from.
It's just nice seeing him have to do the cooking. It's like, ha-ha, shoe on other foot.
But what's interesting about watching it too is on his own show, he had like developed some skills where he could like crack an egg with one hand.
Yeah.
He couldn't do it then. He was a two-hander, you know.
Ah.
And even that, he was kind of like, what do I do? Crack an egg? Like, it was just like your typical young man who's basically eats out.
I remember the happiest I ever saw him on his show was he had a contest where he was with bag boys. And he was, and it was like, who could bag this stuff?
And he was bagging too?
Yeah, because he used to be a bag boy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he went, I was a great bag boy.
Yeah.
And boom! Just really good bagging skills.
Is that right?
Well played.
You can't forget it. It's like riding a bicycle.
Right. Well, I used to ride a bicycle. I have forgotten how. I've got a.
You cannot forget how to ride a bicycle.
Yeah, kind of.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Apparently not. There is an aphorism that says it's like riding a bicycle. You'll never forget riding a bicycle.
No, I think it's
according to that aphorism. You can ride a bicycle.
I think you're thinking of 9/11, never forget. Is that what you're thinking
No, I'm
of?
Not thinking of
Are
that.
You confusing 9/11 with riding a bicycle?
Maybe it's ride a bisexual.
When, what time did you teach your daughters to 9/11?
What time did I teach them to 9/11?
Anyway.
The tango, you mean?
Yeah. You're telling me. Jet fuel does not melt steel. All right. Now, Dave, last week on the show. Let's take you back.
We had a guest.
We did have a guest. We talked about many things.
Yes.
Movies and pornography.
It was fun. It was a fun show.
He's probably across the hall. We could drag him
skulking.
Back again.
Yes, we can bring
skulking.
Him back. Let's do the last five shows or movies we didn't talk about.
Yeah. But on that show, you kind of, I think you might have wrapped up on that one.
No, I didn't. I asked you after the show. So you were setting up something that no one knows what you're talking about.
Okay, well, but after the show, you said, I had something I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we were talking about, at work, one of my coworkers loves Batman.
Okay, and you're working at a garage door
company. Yes,
company.
Yeah, and one of the workers there, one of
lots
fellow,
of ups and downs at the company. I've heard.
Nice. So then that was true applause. I wasn't being sarcastic. I actually enjoyed that. Sorry if people thought I was being sarcastic. I liked it. He's a big fan of the Batman. And is it Batman or the Batman?
Depends what year it is.
Okay, he's a big fan of Batman / the Batman.
Yeah. If you're pretentious, you can call him the Batman. Some people do. And some people call him the Bat.
Oh.
Because they feel like the Batman is dumb. So it's just like, who did this?
Maybe they
the
think
Bat.
Maybe they think it's sexist.
Maybe. But then you're confused because there's Bat girls.
Men.
There's
it's
Bat woman. There's like two Bat women.
Really? It's kind of confusing.
There's at least, oh my God, there's like four Bat girls.
Yeah.
There's like five Robins. A couple of them are women.
Jeez.
There's no female Batman, though. Should be.
No female Batman?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Continue, please.
Okay. You're talking about baseball, right?
Let me tell you something about Batman before we get started. This was something I've got no place to put this in a sketch or anything.
Is this a detour?
Yeah, it's a detour sort of, but it's on the subject of Batman.
Okay.
You know how they always show Batman's parents being killed and they're shot, and the mother's pearls go flying everywhere, and they land, and they bounce
on
the ground.
I don't know that. I've only seen that in The Dark Knight. Is that become like
Dark Knight.
And did that create a cliche that has been repeated ever since?
Yeah. So if you see them in the movies, the pearls always bouncing on the ground. Mm. What I would love to see is the killer turn, slip on the pearls a couple of times, just trying to make his way out of the alley. Because whoop, bam! Yeah. Like, all right, listen, kid, you didn't see that. Whoa! Hey, you keep your mouth shut and remember, crime away. Bam!
Shoots himself in the foot.
Oh, yeah, blam. Like, all right, I'm out of here. Listen, don't avenge them. So on.
So he's a fan of the Batman. So he watches this, I guess, a YouTube show called Superhero Cafe or some kind of name like that.
Okay. This is the same people that do blank, the movie should have ended.
How the movie should have ended.
Yeah. So yeah. How Man of Steel should have ended.
So yeah.
Not snapping the neck. And it usually ends with Batman and Superman in a cafe.
Yeah.
And talking.
That's right.
And it's Chris Reeve era Superman, no matter what they're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
Christian Bale era Batman, no matter what they're talking
about. Who's very grim.
Who's
and
this
very,
kind of Batman?
Yeah.
I'm Batman.
Because I'm the Batman. That's always the kind of thing.
He says, I'm Batman. He doesn't call himself the Batman.
Oh, he just says, I'm Batman. That's right.
That's right.
Because I'm Batman. So they mention on this episode, he's like, are you going to Comic-Con? Superman asks Batman, and Batman kind of makes fun of Comic-Con, and it goes on like that. Right. And I wasn't watching it, but I heard it happening. And so I said to, well, it's kind of interesting to think about, like, would there be a Comic-Con in a world where there were superheroes? Like,
okay.
Like, would it exist? Like, would like a world with superheroes not really need comics about superheroes?
You know, there was one, I'm going to get to that. But I'm going to talk about my own stuff first. No, there was a...
Your own issues?
There's a Neil deGrasse Tyson has a show called Star Talks.
And Star Talks?
Or Star Talk, one of the two. Either it's pluralized or it's not.
Well, stars don't talk. I don't know what he's,
it's,
I don't know what he's doing.
It's both a podcast and it's a TV show.
Sure.
And occasionally you'll have questions people send in, and they're nerdy questions about Star Trek or Star Wars or what have you.
Okay.
And the one question I've written in, but I've not got an answer to.
That's because he can't answer it.
Well, I bet he doesn't have the guts to answer it.
He can't. There's just no way.
Yeah. Is this. Now, Neil deGrasse Tyson has appeared in Superman comics.
Okay.
He's guest starred, and he's talked to Superman in these comics as himself, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
What I want to ask him was that since he, as an astrophysicist, one of the things he is passionate about is finding, you know, life on other planets.
Okay.
If you lived on a world where Superman exists, and clearly there's an alien that exists, and an alien that can travel at an interstellar level faster than the speed of light, do all these things, you, as a scientist, what are you like on that world? What is Neil deGrasse Tyson studying there? Because he's not going, I wonder if there's life on other planets.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I wonder if we can travel faster than the speed of light. Yes. Okay. Wonder what's over. I could just fly and get you that stuff. Aliens are attacking Earth every other week.
Yeah.
I'm sure some of the flying saucers have crashed and we can look at them. So what do you as an astrophysicist in that world do? What's your job? What are you looking up? What do you care about? Or are you like, fuck it, I'm going to just open a restaurant?
Is that your question?
My question is, what's Neil deGrasse Tyson?
He had no response to that.
He has not answered my question. I'm still waiting for a response.
What a turkey.
I'm going to show you a page from a Batman comic.
Okay.
This is Batman. This is number 237.
Yeah.
I believe Neil Adams is the artist on this.
Okay.
And this was one of the earliest things I saw where there was actually kind of a self-referential thing in comics.
Yeah.
Which is all these people in Batman's world are going in a parade or are passing by a parade on a float. And there's both Marvel and DC characters in the parade. You can see in the background. It's like Captain America's there in a Batman comic.
Why is the Superman character so fat?
That's because it's a guy playing Superman in the float.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, in the DC world, at least they're float-worthy characters. And apparently, Marvel comics exist in the DC world, because otherwise you would not have Captain America and some of the other Marvel characters there as well. So in the DC world, there are comic books.
Yeah, that's interesting that they would have. But there's only the one character there. The rest of them are Marvel DC characters.
Are they? Let me just take a look here. Yeah, you got mostly there. Man-Bat. Havok is there.
Oh,
there's Havok, who was created.
I wouldn't know.
He's an X-Man. Okay. He was created, I believe, by Neil Adams.
Oh, okay.
So there he is.
That's it. So, but do you think that in a world with superheroes that, A, would we have superhero comics?
Okay.
Because superhero comics, obviously, I think we can all agree, meet a particular, you know, fantasy that, you know, of this idea of this sort of powerful character who can do whatever.
And yet went out of style for a couple of decades.
And yet went out of style for a couple of decades. But through media, through different media than comics, has been kind of brought back into the limelight. If superheroes were real, would we celebrate them the same way?
Well, let me tell you what they do in Marvel Comics.
Okay.
In the Marvel Comics reality, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby do a or did a comic called Fantastic Four, even though Fantastic Four existed.
Yeah.
And they would go to the Fantastic Four and go, "What'd you do this week?"
Okay.
And they tell them generally, and so they do a fictionalized account.
Yeah.
And then later on, say Reed and Sue are getting married. Stan and Jack would try to get into the wedding, and they'd be going, "Get out of here, you bums! You comic book writers," and they take them on. One of the more interesting things was Captain America, Steve Rogers, was an artist, and he needed a job at one point and got a job drawing the Captain America comic. So he was drawing his own adventures of Captain America.
And when did that happen?
That was probably early 90s.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he was drawing his own stuff. So in the Marvel world, yes, the comics exist, but they're fictionalized depictions of what the superheroes are actually doing. Wouldn't you think, like, if aliens were attacking every week, people would want to, like, read about, you know...
But would they want to read them in comics? Do you know what I mean? Like, comics...
Would you think they wouldn't have TV shows and movies about them? I mean, we have many shows about cops, and cops are a real thing.
I think that's the case. I just wonder if comics, which serve a, you know, traditionally served, I don't know, is this weird? Like, it just seems odd. Like, you know, if you think back to the 50s, the variety of comics that there were wasn't just superheroes. There was romance, cowboys, crime, horror, science fiction. All these different genres, which basically disappeared, and sort of reviving in a way, but
now and
but not to the extent that they once had.
The place that that is still the case is Japan, where they have all those genres, and they're still all popular, and
Europe as well,
right? But I think, like, in Japan, the comics are even more popular than they are in Europe, and more mainstream, you know, with manga. And I think when you look at that they have so much more variety, that's probably why they are more popular.
Mm.
So if you don't like superheroes, you're kind of hard luck, Jack. You really got to search for something here in North America. But in Japan, what do you like? I like fishing. Here's a fishing comic.
Yeah.
There. Whatever you like. I like food. There's one about a guy who, like, goes to restaurants and solves mysteries in restaurants. Here, knock yourself out. All right. Whatever you like. Mm-hmm. There's something for you. The fictional representation in movies, in the Captain America movies, you know, you've got Captain America, First Avenger. You see his cereal that we had in our world, but they had it in his world, and it was just like a loosey-goosey make-em-up of his adventures. And then you see that there was a Captain America comic in that world.
Yeah.
So in the movies, at least, they do have comic books. I don't know what they're like in modern day in the movie.
Okay, so if there were superheroes,
yes,
and there was a Comic-Con,
yes,
superheroes would appear to sign autographs at Comic-Con. Like, they would get paid to go there and sign.
Well, I mean, that would be incredibly dangerous.
Why?
Because the villains would show up and everyone would be in danger. That'd be like having Salman Rushdie show up at your book fair. You know, you have got to put extra security on there. But if you know, who was after Salman Rushdie was a guy with octopus arms and a nuclear missile.
Superheroes could really step in then. But would there be, like, a problem with Salman Rushdie if there were superheroes? Like, wouldn't Salman Rushdie be pretty much all his problems would be taken care of?
How so?
Well, superheroes would step in and solve this big...
Superheroes don't solve anything.
They just create more problems?
Well, I don't know if they create
more... Okay, so if they create more problems...
No, here's what they do.
Yeah.
They maintain the status quo. So if you read...
exacerbate things because they create characters
Marvel,
who want to...
Here's the thing. In the Marvel Universe... Yeah. Oh, we're getting deep nerd. Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Marvel has gone through World War II.
Yes.
And with incredible amounts of superheroes in World War II.
Yeah.
And yet, coincidentally, they both ended the same time. Our world, their world.
Yeah.
Not much effect. Hitler goes out of power the exact same time.
But superheroes were way less powerful in those days.
All right, let's bring us up to date. so we're in a world now that's had superheroes, or they've in the world that has superheroes. We've been in a world that hasn't had superheroes.
Yeah.
We both have Obama as president in the States. So
what you're telling me is superheroes couldn't prevent Obama from becoming president.
There you go.
Is that what you're telling me?
I'm saying anything that matters.
Wow, everybody, wow.
I'm saying anything that matters.
Are they
going to
help Donald Trump get elected?
They have nothing. They do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, all they do is they prevent. Like, here's the thing. Superman, what's Superman going to stop? He's going to stop Bizarro.
But you were.
And so they counter each other. Yeah. Nothing happens. No progression. There's no difference in the Marvel or DC worlds than ours, except there's a lab over there.
You make them seem kind of useless. I mean,
Neil deGrasse Tyson's still a fucking astrophysicist. Why? Who needs that shit?
There's other questions.
What?
Well, I don't know. How about the cosmological questions, like how the universe created?
Oh, we found out. It's a giant hand. They travel back in time. There's a fucking time machine. We can go check it out. There's no need for Neil deGrasse Tyson to be an astrophysicist.
There is. Is that what it is? There's a hand?
Yeah. Basically, here's what happens. If you go back in time far enough, you will see a giant hand start to create the universe. But upon observing that, shit goes down and everything explodes. You can't observe it.
Okay.
If you try to go farther back than that, basically all shit splits. And the first
Where's this from?
This is from Crisis on Infinite Earths. This is from Green Lantern.
Okay.
I
wonder if you're just quoting from Joe Kubrick's Bible.
No, this is what happened was a guy went, I want to see how the universe started. Don't, says the experts. Yeah. I'm going to see. And he got a little thing and he looked back. And because he did that, the universe split, shattered. And so we got all this multiverse because Johnny wants to look. Fucking checked it out. So nicks on that. And for the Marvel universe, there's been many universes before our universe.
So
one of them, Galactus, was in the previous universe. Mm-hmm. He's the sole survivor of that universe.
Okay. Here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Like,
this is your Beatles, brother. This is my Beatles.
Your description. Oh yeah, your description of a world with superheroes is one that exists parallel to our actual world. So superheroes, of course, cannot really affect what's happening in our world because they don't exist in our world. So when writers are writing about our world and putting superheroes in it, mm-hmm. they have to kind of face the facts of what our reality is that really can't be affected, whether it's World War II or the Vietnam War or the election of Obama, which apparently you're really against.
Oh, yeah.
So
I say no Obama.
But if we lived in a world with actual superheroes, they would have more effect than that.
Well,
they could actually affect world affairs in ways that superheroes and comics can't.
Which always lead to a dystopia when you see those in. Then you get Watchmen, right? Then it's a dystopia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we can't handle it. We're all fucked.
You think if we actually had superheroes in real life, superheroes?
Yeah, we'd all be fucked because they'd be destroying cities.
Yeah,
like that amount of destruction, mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I meant. They kind of exacerbate things because it works in this sort of weird. Once there's a Superman, there has to be some counter to Superman that has to appear, and they're both equally destructive forces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so by multiplying those superheroes, you're multiplying the potential villains who are battling. You know, blah blah blah. Right, so. Mm-hmm. It just seems like all around bad.
You've got the anti-Batman argument. By the way, here comes another siren. And what is it? Did anyone here say the Batmobile? Because you'd be wrong. I'm betting it's an ambulance. What do you think, Dave?
I don't think it's coming our way. I think it's going.
It's going?
I think it's going away.
Then I'm still going to say that it was the Batmobile.
I think it was the Batmobile, too.
No, here's the only...
He's coming in to get mad at us.
If superheroes really did exist...
Yes.
First of all, what country has them?
Apparently all American.
That would lean. Yeah, they're all American. Like all the superheroes in the world are American. Then we'd have a very different world, and North Korea wouldn't be North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And
it be a better world then? Do you think?
No, because we got to solve our own damn problems. You can't. You can't let someone else do it for you. You can't have your genie come out and fix everything. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're going to keep fucking
it up. Well, it's not even that. Or even if you wanted a genie to come out and fix things, how they would fix it, you would not necessarily agree with or want.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, what I feel is like the only thing that superheroes can do really is, really, because it affects us the same way in both
worlds.
Let's
pretend they're real.
Well, no. Here's what it is.
Yeah.
They are real when you read them. You read a story that's real in your head. What they can do is inspire you. And I think what a superhero does well is... Okay, say you had power. What would you do with this power?
Mm-hmm.
Would you use it to dominate? Would you use it to take stuff? Or would you use it to help? So you're there you go. So, and I think like, especially when you're talking about like an Avengers movie, like the last Avengers movie, you know, it's like, okay, you've got power. You're America, basically. You know, you've got all this power. What are you going to do? Is it okay to sacrifice some people for the greater good?
Yeah.
You know, there's an argument to be made for that. Or are you going to be the one that's going to go, nope, we're going to make sure that we do the right thing all the damn time. That's what we're going to do because we don't do that thing. We don't make the compromise, even though, yes, this could like endanger some other people, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Are you Captain America? Captain America is America. You know, do you follow that lead? What do you do? And that's what they've done with Captain America over the years is like he always has a crisis of conscience and quits because of something that America is actually going through at the time. Okay. Nixon gets thrown out of office. He goes, fuck this. throws away the costume, yeah. becomes nomad for a
if
bunch.
If Richard Nixon can't be president, I don't want to be Captain America, leaves.
That's right. He loved that.
He loved Nixon.
Yeah.
Big fan. Well, I mean, it's...
Obama gets elected. He goes, to hell with that. Throws his costume away. Now Sam Wilson is Captain America.
Is that true?
It is, actually. But no, that wasn't what happened. He became... basically...
You don't have to explain it.
The stuff that made him young wore off. He's an old man now. So the Falcon took over as Captain America.
Oh, I don't like that.
Okay. That's fine. It'll change by the next movie. Don't worry about it, brother.
That's true.
It's going to be fine. They're all fictional characters. They'll snap back for you.
They'll be there for me
What superhero works for you the most?
Superhero works for me the most.
Can be in movies, TV, or comics.
Hmm.
Do you think is the best one?
I'll tell you the one I like the best is Spider-Man.
Okay.
Just because his adventures seem grounded in a kind of a reality.
Yeah, I like him as well. He's my favorite, yeah, by far.
I also like the idea of Doctor Strange, though. I like this idea of this sort of person who knows the secret world that we don't know about, you know, and is kind of protecting us from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that aspect of... I haven't read that much Doctor Strange, so I'm really just like going by what I
Very
think of the character.
Very few people can make that work. That character has had a lot of canceled books.
Yeah, because it's tricky. But I think the idea of this person who is protecting us from this unseen world that only he knows about, I think the fewer people who know what he does, the more interesting it is mm-hmm. as a character. You know, like he has to be someone who absolutely puts himself in the line with no... And gets no respect for it because no one knows about it. No one can know who Dormammu is because if they do, they're dead. You know, like, and it's an interesting character to me. Like, I like that idea of this kind of underappreciated. But I'm fascinated by this sort of. I think it would be really interesting if it had more maybe cosmological questions or more metaphysical elements to it. You know, if you kind of tried to bump it up a little bit in terms of dealing with. Idea of maybe quantum, like string theory mm-hmm. and multiple universes and things like that would
magic
be kind of
is
fun.
A tricky one because, you know, what barriers do you put on it?
Yeah, and I think that if you kind of leaned away from magic in the character, but more to a kind of a skill set that's more based in, that's hard to describe what I'm thinking of, but.
No, but you're right with Spider-Man in that, you know, you get what Spider-Man does. What's he do? He can stick to walls. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. What else? It's kind of strong. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. He's got spider sense. And that's about it.
Yeah.
He can swing from a web. Sure. All right. Grounded. What can Doctor Strange do? What can't he do?
Yeah. That's a problem though, right?
Yeah. Now we're fucked.
Once you do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem with, I mean, but you could.
It's a problem with Superman,
It's a problem with Superman. Exactly. It becomes this unlimited character with no boundaries. You know, like everyone wants to add more. I think because in the beginning, when there wasn't a sense of continuity to characters, you could just throw in, you know, things that he could do. He could, one week he could have heat vision, the next week, no heat vision.
Mm-hmm.
And no one went, hey, wait a minute, last week he had heat. No one thought of that.
Why is he looking through a wall? He can look through a wall. Why is he having any trouble finding anybody?
Yeah, yeah.
Why can't he just listen for their heartbeat?
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so eventually, you know, it's either you scale that back, you know, which is hard to do because it becomes so, our comics culture now is so entrenched in continuity,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you can really see that when you come out of the Stan Lee era into the Roy Thomas era with Spider-Man, you can almost feel the weight of the continuity weighing the character down. Mm. As soon as Roy Thomas starts writing it, it becomes more about the past than it is about this kind of interesting future for the character.
Though when Roy starts writing it, it feels it's more, and Jerry Conway? It felt, one thing I liked about the character then was how New York it became. Like when Spider-Man first started, it didn't necessarily, like the Ditko issues, they're not necessarily New York. It can be any town, right?
Mm-hmm. It's
a city, right?
I guess.
But when it gets into the, you know, later John it's, Romita, you know, then Ross Andrew, it really felt like city. You got the mm-hmm. cab drivers.
Yeah.
You got, it just feels New York in the 70s.
There is more depth.
Get out of here, you mug.
Yeah. And I think the New York, the early Spider-Mans with Ditko was the New York of Ditko's childhood.
That's right.
You know, and so it was...
Gleaming, shining city.
The fields outside the city and stuff like that, where, you know, there's actual, like, farmland near New York, which I don't think exists anymore. You know, the farmland is farther away from the city, right? than it was for, say, someone like Steve Ditko as a child. You know, like Greenwich Village probably was sort of village-like at some point in the past, and maybe that aspect of it continued on. And but you know, and then by the time you get to the '70s, forget about it. I mean, and the '70s, our attitude about, you know, the New York of the '70s is a lot different in movies and stuff like that too. So I think the comics reflected that change.
I think the best character fantasy wise for a kid is the original Captain Marvel. The idea,
yeah, because he's a kid and then he becomes
You know, and he's vulnerable as a kid, and then like when he wants, he says the magic word, and he's got basically all the Superman powers except all the, you know, they don't load him down with all the visions, you know, all the breath and the thing. It's just like, no, he's the basics.
Yeah,
he's really fast. He's really strong. Can he fly? Yep, and that's about it. And okay, well, yeah, I think like as a kid, I'd feel a little lonely. Hey, how about he's got a best friend with the same powers? What? Captain Marvel Jr., this guy over here. But he's not as strong as you.
Yeah.
But he's just like, he's hanging out and he's kind of cool character. He's your cool friend. He's got hair that Elvis wants to model his hair on. Okay. Well, you know, he's kind of an orphan. That's kind of sad. Wait, what if he's got a sister? Huh? Yeah. And there she goes.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and how about a dog?
He does not have a dog.
Isn't there a...
Nope, there's Hoppy the Marvel Bunny, but that is the only there is. Okay. Although, he does have a talking tiger as a friend.
I love Talkie-Tawny. Because now that you say that about Captain Marvel, he is a character that once again... Spider-Man to me is so real feeling. The early ones, the ones that I like so much. But I have to say, because of Talkie-Tawny, I really...
Billy is a homeless orphan who's selling newspapers, who goes into a subway, gets a magic train, ends up with sees a wizard. Wizard says, say my name. He says his name. Wizard immediately is killed.
Yeah.
Killed. Like, what am I doing? He's in this tunnel.
Yeah.
And who's up there? All these statues, what are they? The seven deadly sins. And they're trapped there. And occasionally they'll get out. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then the wizard comes back as a ghost every so often. Help him out.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, man. It's all this stuff. That he's got a Dumbledore.
Yeah.
It's also Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And who's his villain? His villain's Dr. Savannah. It's a bald guy. You know, evil scientist. He's calls him the big
stories,
red cheese.
The stories were really light.
Yeah.
They weren't super heavy. Like, they felt really light. Yeah. I once wrote a one issue of Captain Marvel or Shazam.
Continue. Go ahead. Please tell me more.
Well, I don't want to give it all away, but it's kind of fun. It starts with
Why did you want to give it all away? Are you worried that someone's going to steal your idea? Well,
you know, because I kind of like it. I like to try and figure out something to do with it. But
why don't you do it? What's stopping you?
I should just draw it as sort of a sub Shazam character.
Just draw it. Period. Who cares?
That's true.
Draw it.
That's true. Yeah, it starts with Savannah in jail, and he carves a gun out of soap, and the guard calls him on it being a soap gun, but he shoots him in the leg with it. But then he says, I fooled them all. It only could shoot one bullet, you know, as he escapes from the jail. It's very silly. It's a very silly story. I had fun. And then Talkie-Tawny is in it as well. Because he's my favorite character.
Yeah, he's a great character.
Yeah. He's on a book tour. Yeah. Pipe-smoking tiger.
Yeah, and there's Uncle Dudley who just pretended to be one of the Marvel family. He was a fraud. And they all
Uncle Dudley. So
Uncle Dudley was, well, he was the uncle.
Yeah.
And he would dress up like he would go like, Shazam! And then he would go behind a tree and he'd get on the outfit. And then he'd come out, it's me! Oh, let's go on our adventures. And like, okay, we'll meet you there. Yes, you will! And he'd just be faking it.
Take a trolley across town.
Yeah, that's what he'd do. He'd drive and they'd show up there. And sometimes that's the villains would attack him thinking he was real and they'd have to cover for him.
Yeah. That's great. I love it.
When they decided to come up with any new superheroes,
they
were always the exact same powers, the exact same suit, with the exception of Captain Marvel Jr. being a blue suit. The rest of them, everyone. Like when they had the three Lieutenant Marvels, are you familiar with those? There was like Fat Billy and like Hillbilly and Tall Billy. And so they all had just the suits and the same powers. Mm. Yeah, just more of the same. What's the rabbit? Same deal, same suit. That's fine.
It
was good stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
I hope they have a little bit of that fun when they make the movie with The Rock and what have you.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they'll...
We'll see.
...have any fun
with
it. I don't think people know how to have fun anymore.
Yeah.
In movies like that.
If you want to, you know, there's been
some... steely gray world out there.
Yeah, there's been some good versions of Captain Marvel, but it's rough. And now a Marvel character has the name. It always felt like it would be a nice thing for like Marvel to just go, just take the name back. Just take it.
Yeah.
Just go ahead.
That will never happen.
Go ahead. Just take it.
That will never happen.
Yeah.
It's too bad. But so you have, that's why you have to call him Shazam because of...
Yeah.
Okay.
Dumb.
Well, let's be fair. DC sued
Fawcett.
Fawcett for the and won the character in a lawsuit.
That's correct. And then the name became public domain. Mm. And then another comic company took it over for a while. Mm-hmm. And are you familiar with that character?
Marvel Man?
No. It's interesting you bring up Marvel Man. Marvel Man was a complete copy of Captain Marvel that was done in England. You're right. Fucking lift. And then later Alan Moore redid it as Miracle. Well, Marvel Man. He called it Marvel Man. And then it got redone as Miracle Man. And very dark stories. Mm-hmm. But no, there was another
but dark stories when it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. In between when Fawcett went out of business and Marvel took on the name as Captain Marvel. For Captain Marvel, there was another character, and his power was to have his body parts shoot out. And he would... Are you not familiar with this? Mm-hmm. It was a comic company that would rip off names. They would like have a character called Dr. Fate. They had a couple other names that they would just like lift and whatever. But Captain
Is that Charlton?
No, it wasn't Charlton. Okay. It doesn't exist anymore. Okay. Fred Hembeck would talk about these characters a lot.
Okay.
But his deal was he would just go, split! And his arms and legs would shoot out and like separate from his body and punch a thief in the face and then whip back to him. And he was called Captain Marvel. And then I don't know if someone went knock it the fuck off or if it just wasn't popular enough and it went out and Marvel went, well, if the name's there, yoink, we're called Marvel. We'll call our character Captain Marvel. And then by the time, you know, you could do Captain Marvel for DC again, they had to put Shazam on the cover. Though they could still use the name Captain Marvel in the books. It just was confusing, I guess. It's a drag.
It is a drag.
Because it's a great name.
It is a great name. And so somewhere in an alternate reality, there is a Comic-Con where little kids with trembling hands are walking up to Superman to get his autograph. And also, Clark Kent is covering the Comic-Con.
I think he's just covering the Comic-Con, as is Billy Batson.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's another reporter as well.
It's like you don't think Superman's there? Signing pictures?
No, because you're going to attract brainiacs. That'd be foolhardy.
If
you can't let someone know who your friends are because they're going to be attacked by the supervillains, you're going to a public place saying you're coming.
Yeah.
Well, fuck off.
So he can't go to like an orphanage or to a hospital and visit sick
he
kids?
He can, but he's got to like do it on the quick and not tell him he's coming. Okay. Otherwise, you're going to get to your Bizarro showing up and Lex Luthor and... All these jerks. I think Luthor's a good guy now. I don't know.
Mr. McSickapickle.
I was actually reading one of my favorite Superman stories today. It was just complete saccharine, but I fucking loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
It was part of, I think I've told you about this before, those British annuals that would rewrite American stories into British and dumb them down. And this was the girls.
So they're written in Americanish. And translated to British.
Yeah. And the concept behind this one, this is when it was like Wayne Boring, big barrel-chested Superman, Robert Mitchum style.
Yeah.
The concept behind this one was the Daily Planet is having its Lovely Child of the Year award.
Okay.
So it's time to give the award to the Lovely Child. And who's going to present the award? Superman. Well, Superman goes to present the award.
Yeah.
And is handing the award to her. And then the parents go, because she's an orphan. My mistake.
Yes.
Orphan. And then someone goes, oh, she can't see the award. She's blind.
Yeah.
A blind girl is the Lovely Child? Gasp, says Lois. Okay. So Lois goes, I want you to meet Superman. And the blind girl ain't having none of it. She's a lovely child.
Yes.
But she's going, he's just made up. He's a fairy tale.
Ooh.
I'm a blind kid. You're trying to pull one over on me, she says, in the most polite way possible.
Yes.
So Superman goes, I'll show you. Picks her up, takes her flying. Well, you know, that was just, you had a wind machine, and this guy's like, no, okay, well, let me show you. He picks up a sculpture of a dog, a metal sculpture of a dog, and holds it up to her. He's like, all right, I feel that. And then he pulls it so it's long like a dachshund and hands it to her.
Yeah.
She grabs it, drops it, because it's red hot, because he just pulled it and it was hot. And he went, oh, you lit a match to it, switched it for a dachshund later, and he's... Oh, for crying out loud. This kid, he's just trying to prove he's Superman. Nothing he can do. She's buying.
Yeah.
So he goes, I got to fix this kid's blindness. So he flies around the world, finds a doctor who's the best eye doctor in the world, brings the eye doctor back, fixes the blindness. While he's doing this, he happens to notice a hobo who's going, I missed my daughter. I don't know what happened. But what happened was, because what happened was she got blind in an accident.
Okay.
Right? A car accident. So it's like, I was in that accident.
I hope everyone's following
and
this.
And I left her because I blinded her. I feel so bad. Mm-hmm. So he goes, you, I know your daughter. What? My daughter reunites her, who can see now, believes in Superman because she can see, with the dad. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
By the way, somehow Superman also finds that, like, looks at the car from the accident and goes, oh, this was just a faulty thing. It wasn't your fault at all. With the car. Oh, so I'm a good guy. Yep, hooray. Everyone's happy, and the girl now believes in Superman.
Huh. That's the whole story.
That is the whole story. But I loved, as a kid, no, you're not Superman. Don't try and fool me, you dope.
Yeah.
No, sir.
So you're
then the happiest ending possible. Yeah, your blindness is cured. Here's your dad. Oh, there was cleared of all charges. Yeah. Happy times are here again, and here's your lovely child award.
Did you enjoy Superman's frustration at not being able to prove?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because as a kid, it never made sense to me that he would fight crime because he was so strong.
Yeah.
If you see him punching a criminal who's a human, what are you doing? You can knock down a wall with that punch.
Yeah.
You can't punch a guy. Batman can punch a guy, but you can't punch a guy. You got to just like blow him with your super. Well, you don't blow him, but you knock him down with your super breath or something. You can't hit a guy. That's the last thing you should be doing. Superman stops people with blowjobs. He's a sensual Superman.
Super blowjobs.
Yeah, this feels like I'm now talking about an Alan Moore story, probably of some sort.
You've gone very modern with your Superman stories now. All right, everybody. I tried to stop the show earlier, but Ian just couldn't let that train stop right away.
Nope.
So I like the fact that the momentum kept rolling.
Right. And did you notice that Dave had a lot to talk about, even though Dave had nothing to talk about?
I didn't say that much.
I win.
I owe you $100, the bet we established before the show started.
So what we're going to say here, folks, is I know Dave keeps mentioning he's going to be turning 50 soon, meaning you've only got a short amount of time to get him a card. So please send your cards.
You don't need to send
cards. Somewhere.
There's no need.
Well, why don't you tell them how to reach us?
Everybody,
yeah.
You can not send a card.
Send a card.
To our Facebook page.
Yep.
Sneaky Dragon on Facebook.
Yeah.
You can mention my birthday on our comments or our bulletin board. Is it called a bulletin board?
Message board.
I'm sorry, everybody. Don't use thumbtacks on your computer.
Please don't.
It's a message board on our website, sneakydragon.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can also reach us by email via our website at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. And you can follow us on Twitter on our moribund account, I think we could describe it
once in a while.
We post a little
thing. We visit
thing.
It like you visit grandma.
Yeah, that's about it. That's about
How you
it.
Doing, Twitter?
How's it going?
Oh, it's nice to see you, Doug. It's Dave. Oh, it's nice to be seen.
Nice to be seen.
How you doing? Can't complain.
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah, that's right. I think the internet's stealing my medicine.
Hashtag senile. you can reach us at @sneaky_dragon.
Yep.
And
if you look back on our pages and see any of the times Dave's put up his address for where to get mixtapes from him, you could send him a card through there.
Oh, yeah. Time to erase those. Everybody.
Send a card.
There's no need.
And you know what? Would it kill you to put $5 in it?
No, don't even
Grandma
say that.
Style.
Don't even say that. It's terrible. Oh, the guilt. The guilt. Ugh. On that note, now that I'm blushing, sweating, feeling sort of a turmoil inside my guilty conscience, everybody, thank you for listening to this week's show.
Send them $5.
And don't send me anything. And we'll see you next week.
High five.